You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us. On today's podcast, we're going to be talking about home and family protection once again, and this is actually part four. So we're going to go ahead and finish up this series here, even though we could talk about it almost indefinitely. It's a huge, huge topic, huge subject. But if you're interested in parts 1, 2, and 3, those were episodes 70, 71, and 72. And now we're on 77. We had some other podcasts in between here. And we're going to talk about home and family protection. And today's emphasis is family protection outside of the home. Okay, so it's going to restaurants, it's you're traveling, situations like that. So just some things to think about with regards to family protection outside of the home. And with that, for our worldview segment for today, I want to review a court case, and because it's related to our subject today. And this court case is Warren versus District of Columbia. And this is a case that has to do very much so with family protection and personal protection outside of the home, and what the duty is of law enforcement. You know, what is their duty? Are they, you know, there's that question to protect and serve, and are they required to protect you? You know, have the courts affirmed that is their duty? To protect you, and the answer is no. They do not have a duty to protect you. Okay, that's the reality of the situation. And to their in their defense, they can't. They cannot protect every single person. They cannot protect your family. And so we have seen over and over again, the courts have said no. They don't have a duty to protect you. Okay, and that's quite frankly because they've been. Law enforcement has been sued over and over and over again. And in fact, I will not say that they haven't been neglectful in many cases. And in fact, this is one, Warren versus District of Columbia. They were completely neglectful, but they were not. I mean, this complaint was dismissed ultimately. But I'm going to tell you about it. And I think that we need to understand, one of the main things that we need to understand here is that they can't protect everyone. Okay, so it wouldn't make any sense for this complaint to go through and these people to be paid lots of money, because the police, the law enforcement are not going to be able to protect you in every situation. That's just the reality of the situation. Hence why it isn't a biblical principle that you have a right to defend yourself in the face of evil. Okay, so this is important. So let's get into this here real quick. I want to give you a little bit of background here on Warren versus District of Columbia. So this happened, this actually happened a long time ago, 1975. And Carolyn Warren and another lady were sharing a room on like the third floor of a house, or you know, one of these multi-rental type places, almost like think of it as a duplex. And this was in the District of Columbia. And there was another lady, Miriam Douglas, who shared a room on the second floor with her four-year-old daughter. They were asleep. The women were awakened by the sound of the back door being broken into by two men. Okay, they were later identified as Marvin Kent, James Morse. The men entered Douglas's second floor room, and then they forced themselves on her. They raped her. They brutalized her. All right. So when Warren and Talaferro, who again were on the third floor, they telephoned the police. They told the officer on duty what was happening. There was all kinds of screams, and they required immediate assistance. Okay, and so Warren's call was received at the police department at 6 in the morning, 6:20 in the morning. There was a burglary in progress. They didn't know exactly what was happening. At just a few minutes later, the call was dispatched to officers on the street as a code to assignment, although the calls of a crime in progress should be given priority and designated code 1. Okay, so there was a mistake there. Four police cruisers responded to the broadcast, three to the Lamont Street address, and one to another address to investigate a possible suspect. So, all right, so meanwhile, while that is occurring, a Warren crawled from their window onto an adjoining roof and waited for the police to arrive. While there, they observed one policeman drive through the alley behind their house and proceed to the front of the residence without stopping, without leaning out the window, without getting out of the car, basically just doing a drive-by. Now, a second officer apparently knocked on the door in front of the residence but left when received no answer. Three officers departed the scene approximately, this is like 10, 15 minutes after this call was made. They did a drive-by, they did a knock, and they left. All right, so Warren then again heard continuing screams, again called the police, told the officers that the intruders had entered the home, requested assistance again. Police officer assured help was on the way. Second call was received, and again, think of this at about 30 minutes later from the first call. They were going to investigate. Later, Warren then heard the noise stopped, so the screaming ceased and all of that. Then what happened was Warren went to go basically investigate, make sure everything was all right. And she believed that police were in the house. They called down to Douglas. Again, this is the woman that was being brutalized, and thereby alerting these two men to their presence. Well, then what happened is that knife point, the two men forced all three women to accompany them to Kent's apartment. And then for the next 14 hours, the women were held captive. They were beaten, brutalized, raped, etc. Just an absolutely terrible, 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 evil event. Okay, so then later, these three women brought claims of negligence against the District of Columbia and the Metropolitan Police Department for the following reasons: dispatcher's failure to forward the call with the proper degree of urgency, the responding officer's failure to follow standard police investigative procedures, specifically their failure to check the rear entrance and position themselves properly near the doors and windows to ascertain whether there was any activity inside, and dispatcher's failure to dispatch the second call. All right. Now, ultimately, I'm giving you the real short version here. So that's the background. That's what happened. And so these women said, hey, this was a complete negligence. We were totally and completely brutalized because of the negligence of law enforcement here. Okay. This complaint was dismissed by the trial court. All right. So the District of Columbia Court of Appeals dismissed the complaint. So in other words, they said to these three women, sorry, they did not fail at their duty. And this is really comes down to what is called the public duty doctrine. And the public duty doctrine is a principle of personal injury law that government owes duties to the public at large rather than individuals. Hence why individuals suing law enforcement for quote unquote neglect never holds up. It doesn't hold up. It's not that law enforcement is not sued for various other reasons, but when it comes time down to whether or not their duty was breached in the case of personal protection, that they're not held accountable for that, unless of course they're breaking the law themselves. So that's important for us to understand this public duty doctrine. Okay, so it's a special relationship between the government and the people. The government says we don't have an obligation to individuals. We have an obligation to the public at large, not to individuals. And that applies to personal protection. Okay, it's very important to understand that, and that's why it makes no sense for individual governments to be placing restrictions on your ability to defend yourself. It's terrible, and it's contrary to law. know, since they do not have an obligation to you as an individual, they shouldn't be able to take away your right to defend yourself and your family. Okay, so as Christians here, we must understand our inalienable right, our biblical right to defend ourselves, okay, to maintain our life and that of our family. All right, and secondly, we must understand that evil exists. This is an important, as far as home and family protection, understanding that evil exists, not going in with these rose-colored glasses and sure, no, nothing bad will ever happen. That's not an attitude that we should take, because as Christians, we should understand human nature. We understand that that man is evil, okay, and man can be extremely evil, especially here in the case of Warren versus District of Columbia and many, many countless other examples. In fact, I just watched a video this morning. It was very disturbing, extremely disturbing. One of the hardest videos I've ever had, that I've ever watched. Okay, and it was in China, and there was a little child, I'm talking like 4 years old, sweeping the sidewalk with a little broom and a little dustpan, and individually, and there's no context here, so I don't understand, you know, why this happened necessarily, but a man came down that same sidewalk, and again, this is like a surveillance type camera, and just started absolutely beating the small child, threw him on the ground, stomping on his head, taking the broom and beating him with it over and over again. And again, I mean, these like deadly force encounter. And from what I could gather, amazingly, the child did survive, but it was just like sheer evil. And what was worse about that is the fact that several people walked by while this was happening. They did nothing. Okay, and one of the principles that I've talked about many times before is called the bystander effect. And what happens is that people freeze and that they become nothing more than a bystander. You know, these people didn't even stop to film this, you know, to maybe effect an arrest later or anything like that. They just simply walked by and did nothing. Okay, and you know, I think part of it is this bystander effect a lot of times happens because people, they cannot believe what's in front of them. They cannot believe that this is happening. It makes no logical sense for a grown man to stomp on the head of a 3 or 4 year old for no apparent reason. Okay, it should never happen anyway, but in this case, that walking down the side of the road, you see something like that, it makes no logical sense, and it's hard for us to compute that. Okay, in most cases, even though that, you know, we're all fallen man, and but still, this doesn't make any sense to us. So that leads to the bystander effect, and this is why people don't do anything. Finally, someone did, but this was, I'm telling you, after like 20 stomps onto someone's head, I honestly thought the child was dead. I really did. The fact that he lived is amazing. And if he lived without traumatic brain injury, I would be surprised. Okay, so very tragic. So we need to understand that. Evil exists, and we have a right, an obligation to defend ourselves and that of our family. And so as we think about that as our backdrop, we want to talk here about some home and family protection measures. Again, today is family protection outside of the home. So when we leave our home, are we thinking at all about family protection? You know, do we take measures outside of our home, or are we very complacent? I mean, most of us are complacent, even myself, in a lot of situations can get very complacent. And family protection outside the home, because a lot of times the first thing that we think about is like, oh, I position myself into a restaurant so that, you know, I can see the entrances, etc., which is a fine thing to do. It's a technique, but it's such a drop in the bucket compared to the bigger picture. So what I want to do today is not pretend to be comprehensive. There's no possible way to be comprehensive. But what I want to do is lay out just a few scenarios or different situations that you can get into and talk about it from that perspective, because if you just hit these few things, I think it helps to build a picture and to make people more aware of their surroundings when it comes to family protection outside the home. First thing I want to talk about is the idea that the mindset that you must take, and that is you are your own first responder. So we tend to think of first responders as law enforcement and medical personnel. But you are your own first responder, and we've talked about this before, but how long does it take for first quote-unquote first responders to respond? And in many cases, in best case scenario, it's a couple of minutes. Worst case scenario, they're not coming. Okay, so if we combine this with some type of major natural disasters, again, where is the duty of law enforcement and first responders? It's not to you as an individual, it is to the public at large. Okay, so they're going to make a decision regards to either responding to you or something that would be perceived as more important to the public at large. They're going to the public at large. All right, so I'm not even talking about type of major events, you know, a major natural disaster. They're probably not coming to an individual. They're worried about bigger picture things. So that's the first principle that we must understand. We are our own first responders, and we cannot rely on law enforcement and medical to come to our rescue. Now, that doesn't mean that that's not what we do. I mean, there's absolutely nothing wrong with you know, understanding the situation, and, you know, one of the first things you're doing is dialing 911. This is a good thing, and it works great when we have a system that's smoothly running, and like I said, they generally will do a great job and respond very quickly to situations like that. But based on the public duty doctrine and this idea, we must be prepared to be our own first responder. It's not that we want to be vigilantes. It's that we need to prepare for our own self-protection and that of our family. Just like a fire extinguisher in your home, a first aid kit in your car, knowing things like CPR, you are your own first responder when it comes to family protection. And so we have, in many states, we have Castle Doctrine. We have Beyond Castle Doctrine that allows you to, say, conceal carry a firearm. Okay, so conceal carry for a firearm is what I consider a very important thing. It's an important right. I don't think you should have to get a permit to do it. I believe in what it would be called constitutional carry. The Constitution gives you the right to conceal that firearm for personal and family protection. And however, most states have gone to something either a permit style right, or, you know, to varying degrees. So some are better than others. So you have one thing is you have to check your state for your concealed weapon firearms laws. You know, whether it's just constitutional carry, anybody can do it, to requiring a permit, to pretty much being outlawed in the case of like California, except for under certain circumstances. But I think that as a responsible adult, someone with a desire for personal protection and family protection, that this should be part of your repertoire, okay? Concealed carry, permit, firearm, weapon, whatever you want to call it, is a good starting place, right? Now, we've talked about this many times on this podcast as far as getting the proper training and, you know, picking the proper or a good and acceptable firearm. But this is important because, again, you are your own first responder. So let's talk about some situations. And I think that a good place to start is with the principle, avoid dangerous people and places. Now, that sounds like a very simple principle, and it is. Yet, how many of us break that principle all the time? Okay, you hear about, anytime you hear about stuff that happens, a lot of times it's like, well, what were they doing there? Why were they there? It's interesting, you know, one of the things that when I was in the Marine Corps, an old commander had said is something like, nothing good happens between midnight and 05. And it's true, you know, whether or not you want to, you know, subject yourself to that kind of thing, you know, doing what people normally do between midnight and 05. You know, so be it. But it's true. A lot of bad things. I mean, that's when people get DUIs. That's when there's, you know, usually fights. That's when people get hurt. You know, the major deaths involving alcohol. All those things happen between midnight and 05. All right. Not only, but a lot of times that's the thing. So if you want to avoid dangerous people and places, well, there's a good place to start. Why not just have an internal family policy? It's like, you know, as to the max extent possible, we're going to try and not be on the road or out between those hours. You'll probably avoid a lot of bad things. Here's another thing. You want to avoid dangerous places. You know, so for example, if you know that civil unrest is occurring in, say, Baltimore, why would we go there? Why would we even drive through there? Everybody has seen what's going on there here lately. I mean, tons of shootings and killings, and it's still going on today. And it's happening. There's rioters. There's breaking the windows. And, you know, whether it's in restaurants. If you saw that footage of all the people that were in the restaurants and they're throwing bricks and stuff through the windows, why would you be out at a restaurant in Baltimore right now or at any time in the last 2 weeks? That's the time to avoid places like that. So it's very important. So there's this major principle of avoid dangerous people and places. All right. So, and two things associated with that: social unrest and also gang violence. So these are combined, and they're obviously both involved here in Baltimore and Ferguson and the LA riots in the 90s and on and on and on. And sure to come in the future in various places as well. Okay, and they can erupt pretty quickly. However, in most cases, there's usually some kind of warning. At least, it doesn't usually spring up overnight. All right, it can happen very quickly for sure. But we need to stay abreast of these types of social issues that are creating ripples of controversy in our communities, especially ones that stir up emotions, high emotion. You want to avoid those places. I mean, you've seen the footage. The cars are driving through and then something happens and people are smashing, they're throwing rocks. And then what else do you see? You see law enforcement vehicles, you see medical vehicles coming through. They're throwing rocks and all kinds of stuff at these law enforcement vehicles and medical vehicles. Are the law enforcement vehicles stopping? No, they're not. They're not stopping because they cannot contend with all of that. If they were to stop, it would create more havoc, more violence. So avoid dangerous people and places. You got to get out of there. Stay out of that area. Don't even come close to it. If I would never take my family anywhere near a place like that, if that type of thing is occurring, I tend to avoid big cities anyway with my family, because if things are going to happen, those are the likely places that's going to happen. Gang violence, which is obviously also associated with Baltimore. Being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Again, you can avoid most of this just by avoiding those these places. Known gang activity, known gang turf. Obviously, avoid all of this. So, you know, most homicides do not occur via random violence. In fact, in most cases, homicides are done by people who know the victim, etc. Whether that's, what doesn't matter if it's drugs or domestic violence, whatever. But with gang activity, it's usually more random. Okay, look at Baltimore. You have innocent people driving down the road, and they suddenly become subject to this gang violence or these riots. All right, that leads me to another thing as far as being in a vehicle. Don't be afraid to use your vehicle as a defensive weapon. I mean, are you going to stop if people are throwing rocks and they're trying to get in your vehicle? No, you need to go. All right, now, a technique. I mean, obviously, I'm going to go through at whatever rate of speed I need to go through to, in order to avoid my family coming to harm. But a technique where you're trying to balance inciting more riot, inciting more violence, with getting out of that situation that I've heard once, and it makes a lot of sense to me. Is you're moving your vehicle. Let's say if you don't want to just start plowing through people, because if you do get stopped, you're going to get ripped. Your entire family is probably going to get ripped out of that vehicle and probably killed. Okay, so if you're plowing through people, that in high emotion, that high violence, it's probably going to not go well. But if somebody is in a situation like that where your car is getting pummeled, you want to maintain forward movement. You don't want to stop. You certainly don't want to unlock the doors and get out. You want to maintain forward movement at a slow rate of speed. And so that people can, you're not going to stop, and do not stop. And you have to accept the fact that your car is going to get mangled. You're pushing forward slowly. You're not killing anyone. Okay, you're not running anyone over. They have the opportunity to get out of your way. But you're continuing, you're moving forward. So you're kind of pushing them out of the way. They may be wanting you to stop. Okay, to me, that strikes a good balance between inciting more violence and yet maintaining, getting out of there. And then once you have a freedom of movement, once you see an opportunity, then by all means, get out of there at whatever speed you can maintain. So I know it sounds kind of counterintuitive, but you're going through there slowly until you see an opening, and then you want to speed out of there. Okay, and that way you're not killing anyone, you're not running anyone over, because what is that going to do? That's going to incite massive violence. Okay, so I don't say that because all these wonderful people who are smashing your vehicle and trying to get at your family, because I care about them. I'm saying that you're maintaining that balance and getting out of there. Okay, so that's one thing to keep in mind if you ever do get caught in that situation. But of course, the best is just avoid. Avoid. Stay out of that situation. And that's a no-brainer, but how many people do we see get caught in it? All the time. You saw that, those people in the restaurant. And one of the things I'll note is in the restaurant, everybody inside, their stuff was being thrown, and there was a lot of screaming and crying, and everybody was fearful and afraid. And the rioters had not made entry into the building. Okay, they were just throwing things through and kind of moving through and leaving a path of destruction. Okay, a couple of guys in that restaurant started shouting at the rioters, started making insults and comments. This is not a good idea. Okay, and I understand they were very angry, and at these people that were just destroying the place, and other men were going to them saying, "Shut up, be quiet." If all of a sudden all those rioters make entry, then we're in an even worse position. Okay, and that's true. So the best thing in that situation is keep your mouth shut. wait for it to pass, and get out of there. Okay, that you don't want to specifically if there's a lot of gang members and everything else, you know, in their little culture, it's all about respect. And if you disrespect them, they have to do something, right? That's part of that culture, that gang culture. So don't do it. Resist the temptation to yell out. And even if you are concealed carrying firearms, resist the temptation to brandish your weapon unless it's required. Okay, so just let it pass. They'll be able to replace all those windows. Just hope that they're not making entry. Again, all these people, they're not prepared to deal with rioters coming in. Keep your mouth shut. Let them get through there, and then get out. Okay. And again, you can call law enforcement, but they're probably not coming, right? They're not coming to that individual spot unless that's their greatest duty to the public at that time. All right, so a very important principle when dealing with that. Let's dial it back a notch, and next talk about, like, hey, going to dinner with your family and, say, going into your run-of-the-mill restaurant. Two things, and this applies to any store, any brick and mortar, anything that you go into with your family or even alone. First thing is as you get to the place, as you move to park, that you are observing the area. This is not paranoia. This is just simply being aware. As you're observing the area, you're looking around, you're seeing, okay, is there anything unusual here? Nothing out of the ordinary, things like that. You want to back into a spot. You just get into the habit of backing in to a parking spot and pick a spot that's well lit and that's and might even be closer to an exit. Okay, so the whole point of backing into a spot and parking in a manner that's maybe not most convenient, but it's most expeditious to leave an area, all right? Because that, I mean, if something bad happened, what are you going to do? You're either going to stay put or you're going to leave the area. Well, so you want to be able to be set up to leave the area in the most expeditious manner. Going into a building. Most buildings, restaurants, are a great example. They have lots of windows. And you want to be observant and look into the restaurant, building, bank, whatever, before you walk in. Okay, you're just observing. It's just situational awareness, and you're observing, just making sure there's nothing going on. I mean, if there's, how many times have you heard about people walking into in some type of armed conflict situation where someone may be brandishing a weapon or holding or robbing people, whatever? They're completely unaware of their situation. Just think of it like this: when people walk into a restaurant or whatever and bump into each other, lack of situational awareness. So before you make entry into any building with your family, you're looking in the building to make sure just everything looks normal, okay, that there's nothing unusual happening. Now, when you go into a restaurant, because I like to use that example, you take your seat, you want to sit somewhere that's comfortable, that's not too close to the entrance, but certainly not in an area that's keeping you locked away in kind of a choke point situation. And yes, you do want to be able to observe the entrances and the exits. So that does apply. But here's the most important thing that I want you to get from this portion, and it's based on a study that was done about fire. And I don't remember the exact situation, but there was a very crowded nightclub, okay, where a couple hundred people inside of a big nightclub. And for whatever reason, a major fire started, and it really spread quickly. And everyone, of course, panicked and tried to get out of the building. And they got kind of piled up near the entrance there. And I want to say out of 200 people, 150 40 died. I mean, just like a lot of people died. Well over half died just simply because they were not able to get out. Here's the point. When you go into a building, you're training yourself that, okay, I'm walking in this way. I'm going to leave this way. All right. And without thinking about anything else, if a calamity happens, if an emergency occurs, you are automatically going to go out the same way you came in. Okay. And guess what? Everyone else is going to do that as well. So even if there's three or four exits, if you haven't thought about that, and if you haven't looked around and said, okay, there's a side exit over there, there's a side exit over there, everyone during an intensive situation and an emergency is going to have a tendency to go back out the same exact way they came in. So there might be three exits, but everyone's going to try and go out the same exit they came in. So for the case of a restaurant or a movie theater or a nightclub, where are people going? They're going back out the same way they came in. And that was when they did the review of this nightclub fire. That is exactly what happened. There was like, they had all the requisite exits. You know, there was like five exits, two on each side, and then the main entrance and exit. Well, nearly everyone tried to cram through that exit the way they came in because they never thought about, okay, if something bad happened, which is unlikely, how am I getting out of here? All right, so that's an important aspect. I always, whenever I go into a building, I look around and go, okay, you know, how would I get out of here? Especially if you're talking about where there's a lot of people. Okay, a theater, for example, a full theater. They have exits on the sides, and quite frankly, you know, your plan should be to go out any exit but the one that you came in. All right, because that's most people aren't thinking about any of this, and they're all going to try and cram back through the way they came in. Okay, that's human nature. If we absent anything else, we're going to go with what we know, you know, intuitively. And intuitively, that's what you've learned. Okay, you came in that entrance, you're going to go out that entrance. And when you're panicking and freaking out, that's where you're going to go. That's what you're going to do. Unless you've deliberately thought, okay, something weird happens, we're going out that side exit right there. Okay, so that's a very important aspect. So we're looking in parking lots. We're making sure that there's nothing unusual going on, and we're looking inside of buildings before we enter the building. And when we enter the building, we're sitting ourselves in a position where we can observe, and we are determining an alternate exit, which actually should become your primary in case of an emergency. Okay, especially in a crowded area. Now, if you're in a building that is not crowded, well, they're not going to pile up at the back, but you should still have another way to get out. Okay, and that's why, you know, if you look at building codes and all that, there has to be multiple exits of, say, a bedroom. Okay, and the door and a window, for example. Okay, so that would be an important aspect of family protection. And talking to your kids about these things, talking to your spouse about this. I've told this story two or three times, and when we go into a restaurant, say, okay, if something bad happened, where would you go? You know, what would be the best exit? And, you know, now they know. They all say, oh, not the way we came in, but, you know, this side exit over here that's closest to us. With that being said, the other thing that you need to ensure with your family is that they have a plan. Okay, so there's a communication plan and there's a meeting plan, and it shouldn't be left up to figure it out when something happens. The next kind of scenario I want to talk about is gas stations or pumping gas. And again, what I'm talking about here applies to many other situations like this, but it's a good one because we do it often. And so here's some basic, I don't call them rules for awareness while we're getting gas. The first is, don't do it at night. Okay? Especially not after, say, midnight. Right? Remember, nothing good happens between midnight and 05. Daytime is better, and kind of a more crowded area is better. You want to make sure that, again, as you approach the gas station for gas, you're just looking around, making sure there's nothing weird going on. You get gas. You want to make sure that you, and this is happens so often, when you watch all the videos of carjackings and things, a lot of times they're at gas stations. What do we do? Or not what, well, not what I do, hopefully not what you do. What a lot of people do is they'll leave their keys in the car, and they might even leave the driver's side door open. It's like an invitation. Please come steal my car. So take your keys with you always and lock the car. Okay, this is going to prevent a lot of problems. But again, if you're doing this in the daytime rather than night, you're doing it in a crowded area versus a very empty area, you're probably not ever going to encounter these things. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't use this. You want to make sure you're scanning around you, you're maintaining your situational awareness. You're looking for people that are walking around. You just want to walk. If you see two people that look kind of strange and they all of a sudden split up and they're coming towards you, be very careful of that. The other thing you don't want to do is to stand right there next to the pump, because a lot of times what you're doing is you just boxed yourself in. Think about where you're positioning yourself. You want to be in a position where you can move with the most direction. Okay, so you don't want to put yourself in a position where you can only go one of two ways, or you want to put yourself, say at the back of the vehicle or at the front of the vehicle, where your situational awareness is better, where you can look around you, and where you're not boxed in to one area, so that if two people approach you, you're standing next to the pump, you're boxed in, you have nowhere to go. Okay, so the more awareness you have, it doesn't mean that bad things aren't going to happen necessarily. It just means you have more time. And that is a crucial aspect of personal protection, family protection. You want to ensure that you have as most time as possible. If people do approach you at the gas station, a lot of times criminals will use this kind of almost like an interview. So they'll ask you questions before they make whatever move they're going to make, whether it's a physical attack or they're going to try and steal your vehicle, take your wallet, whatever. You know, it might be asking for change and or directions, things like that. So you need to have some awareness about you. You don't want to get into this situation. You don't want to allow someone to interview you because they could be working with someone else or anything else. Be firm and don't be afraid to be rude. It's just like, you know, something firm like stay back. No, you know, something very firm, like basically saying, hey, this interview is over. And, you know, you're kind of got an awareness about you. See, a lot of times we tend to not want to offend other people. So you have the example of the elevator opens up, but there's a woman standing there. She's about ready to get on the elevator. She sees someone there. The hair on the back of her neck stands up. Everything in her is saying, don't get on the elevator. But she gets on the elevator because she doesn't want to offend the person in front of her, or, you know, whatever the case may be. And then something bad happens. Okay? If that happens to you, if you have some type of intuitive thing happen where you're like, oh, this just doesn't feel right, well, then listen to that intuition. Okay? There's a great book out there called The Gift of Fear that talks about this very thing, about basically listening to your intuition. Your intuition is based on experiences and everything else. They, a lot of times, are just subconscious, and that's why, a woman will get uncomfortable in a certain situation. She should act on that uncomfortableness, okay? Despite an individual maybe being offended or going, she thought I was, you know, some kind of bad guy. I would not be offended if I'm on an elevator and a woman sees me and then says and waits for the next one. Okay, that shouldn't offend anyone like that. So, getting back to the gas station, it's the same thing. So, if the more situational awareness you maintain, the better your situation. But again, if you're following those basic guidelines, you're locking your car, you're taking your keys with you, you're doing it at daytime instead of in the night, and you're doing it a little bit more of a public place. You're scanning, you're not getting yourself boxed in. You're going to be, you know, most likely nothing's ever going to happen to you, because what criminals are looking for, easy victims. They're looking for easy targets. They're not going to, somebody who's standing at the back of their vehicle looking around is probably not the person they're going to pick. Okay. Okay. I want to talk about one more category of personal family protection outside the home for today, and it has to do with parking lot safety. Parking lot, parking garage. This could be your entire family. This could be, you know, just your wife. So I want to talk about that a little bit. If your entire family is with you, that's okay, because you have multiple people. Your awareness should be even higher. But particularly, I want to talk about if, let's say, your wife is alone and she has young children with her, and you're doing the grocery store thing and loading groceries. It's a classic case. A lot of, you know, you wouldn't expect this to happen, but there's been kidnappings, there's been rapes, there's been all kinds of disasters that have happened in parking lots, whether, again, at night or in the day. So, with keeping with our principle, getting your groceries and doing that kind of thing in the daytime as opposed to the night is always always preferred. Again, nothing. All of the bad things usually happen at night, and all the bad things usually happen to people who look like victims. Again, criminals are looking for victims, not people who are going to fight back. So, one of the first things we have to understand is that if we're in a parking lot, parking garage, whatever, or in the case where the wife with the young children is taking her groceries to the vehicle, do not be on phones, iPods, whatever. Do not be distracted. Be looking around. That shows an air of confidence. That shows an air of awareness. And that's generally not what criminals are looking for. So that needs to be you. You need to be aware. You're not texting on the phone or anything else. Put it away. Once you, get situated, you can take care of that kind of thing. So if you have young children with you, most people know this, but if you don't, they are the last thing that goes in the car. So after loading the groceries, then the baby goes in. Okay, then the small child goes in. They don't go in first, because if you have a type of carjacking scenario, it's a worst nightmare, but you see it from time to time as somebody carjacks a vehicle, there's a child in the back seat. Okay, so if somebody's going to take your vehicle, you don't want them to take your children. Okay, it's better they get away with the vehicle without your kids in it. So the child goes in last. When you're putting your child into a good technique, when you're putting your child into, say, a baby seat, get in the back seat with your child. Shut the doors, lock it, strap them in, do another quick look around. I know this just sounds paranoid, but it's not. It's just aware. And when looking around, you see that everything's clear, then you're going to get out and move to the front. You should have, even if you're concealed carrying, you should have something else, say pepper spray or something like that. So if you're by yourself, if you happen to be at night and you're getting groceries, you've got that in hand when you're moving from the store to the vehicle. Okay, that would be another good technique. Don't be afraid to ask for an escort from one of the, say, a store employee. Multiple people are better than one. If you can get a man to accompany you to your car, that would be good. Okay, what are criminals looking for? They're looking for easy victims. They're not looking for the multiple people. They're not looking for the store employee to be there that may or may not have a radio, that kind of thing. So make sure you keep that in mind. So after you have done that, after you've loaded and you're moving on your way, if you're someone who conceal carries, now, again, you have to make your own decision on this and based on the local laws. I don't immediately buckle up when I'm in a parking lot or even at a gas station. I generally will unbuckle as I'm approaching, and I'm not talking about a mile out. I'm talking about, okay, I'm in the parking lot. I'm pushing forward to the gas station or to the parking space. I might unbuckle right there. Why? If I do need to get at my firearm, I'm better able to do that without the seatbelt hindering me. Okay, and the same thing in reverse. When you're leaving the parking lot, when you're leaving the gas station, I'll just start rolling forward a little bit until I'm sure that nobody's going to come and try and get at the vehicle, try and get in, that kind of thing. Even though the vehicle should always be locked, it doesn't matter. If somebody comes up and tries it, you can either move out of there with the vehicle, or if you have to get at your firearm, it's easier to do so without it. And then once you buckle up, you're on your way. Okay, so that's, again, you have to make that decision because in some places you might get a ticket for doing that. Parking garages. Parking garages should be avoided if possible. If not, during the daytime when things are more busier than at night, obviously. I mean, it's a classic movie where the parking garage, if you do find yourself in that situation and you're in an empty or a near empty parking garage, or at least there's no people around, you want to walk down the middle. You can, if there's no vehicles around, you want to walk down the middle. It gives yourself the most time in case somebody does approach you or is hiding. You want to have some type of plan in place. I recommend if you have pepper spray or something like that, or you have fairly close to your vehicle and you have an emergency alarm on there, just that noise, if somebody all of a sudden approaches you, you hit it, may knock them off their plan. And even if you are carrying a concealed carry firearm, having that pepper spray, because you don't necessarily want to move right into deadly force, might be the way to go, because obviously you're not going to walk with your weapon drawn. All right, so all these things to keep in mind. Baby goes in last. Get someone to escort you to your car. Try and avoid going to parking garages or parking lots at night. If you do have to go at night, that you're going to go into well-lit areas, you're not going to be on your phone. You're going to use escorts. You're going to have a plan in case something bad happens. Okay, so what we covered today was just a few general situations that the principles of these situations can apply across the board to anything to ensure that your family's safe and that you're safe. But again, I go back to that first principle, which is avoid dangerous people and places. That will probably keep you out of 90% of any potential danger. Okay, and it just makes sense. Why would I drive through Baltimore today? Why would I go to a gas station at 2 in the morning when it's one of those gas stations that's closed, but you can still get gas, it's dark? Why would I do that? Okay, and if your answer is, well, because otherwise I was going to run out of gas, well, bad on you for not ensuring that you're never put in that situation. Okay, so just some principles to think about with family protection and personal protection outside of the home. Our scripture for today comes from Psalm 138. I give you thanks, O Lord, with my whole heart. Before the gods, I sing your praise. I bow down towards your holy temple and give thanks to your name for your steadfast love and your faithfulness, for you have exalted above all things your name and your word. That was verses 1 and 2. This concludes today's podcast. Thanks for listening. Please visit us on our website, thecourageouslifepodcast.com. We'd appreciate any comments or questions that you have. And also like us on Facebook, The Courageous Life Podcast. Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.